been floating around all over the place, but I'm kind of settled down now in Vancouver. Angela's here too. I got here August 3rd and she showed up 2 weeks later. And I've just been like reigniting some of my old activities that I had going on here and looking for a place to live next month. And so everything's settled now and I can just play. Yeah, I grew up just south of Windsor, in a place called Kingsville. It's the most southern town in Canada. It's actually on Lake Erie. We're just across from Ohio. And my grandmother was born in Youngstown, Ohio. So she's an American grandmother, and her family moved, a lot of them from Ohio, over to Detroit, east side of Detroit. And I still have lots of relatives in Detroit. Angela actually had, she had a reading and Ion said, well, Angela actually has angel blood in her. Then Angela, when she figured out what angels were, she decided she didn't want that angel blood in her anymore because it was too empathetic, too empathic. And she would be doing her healing and someone would pay for an hour of healing and she'd go on and give them 6 hours just because she thought it was the...
No, I couldn't do it.
She couldn't stop. She decided, and after that, I'm getting rid of the angel blood. I don't want to be coerced by this angel blood into giving everything away for free anymore.
No, not even that. I did that.
Oh, it's done. Okay, so she's done her time as an angel, even though there's no time.
Years.
She kissed her angel ass goodbye.
No, because it affects me normally. No, it was affecting me normally. So I just said I'd get rid of it because every time I used to do healing and... I couldn't help it, and I could never charge for it. I had this weird thing about I couldn't charge for it, and then I found out it was because it was the angel blood that was going through me, like that's where it was all coming from. But it was starting to like affect my own, the other part of me. That's like it was in the way of the other parts of me having fun, because every time I go to do something, like if I wanted to enter a competition, I could win it, but I'd let someone else win it. Like, or just like stupid things. I was so happy to serve or something, if that makes sense. And that was my purpose. And I put myself out so much just to help other people. Like, and it was actually starting to come against me because I was my other part, the other human parts of me were getting nowhere. You know, because every time I'd start to do something new, then I'd end up giving it away. And I've always been like that. It's awful. So I said to Ian that I wanted gone. And even like languages, you know, the angel languages, I speak all them and I kind of can transcribe a few of them. And the whole thing was taking over my life, like, because I'm 26 now and every single thing has been about that my whole life.
You were able to remove the angel bloodline from your essence?
Manifestation, presentation. It's there like lines of light or something, and so those ones are offline now. They've been reimmersed into non-physical to be replaced by other ones.
Since then, your experiencing is easier?
Yeah, and it's more of an eternal place of being or something. It's like there's no positive or negative. It's as if like you have different characteristics and then you just take those characteristics off because they're holding up all the other characteristics, and then it's almost like the ones that weren't there come back and then you get to play in those. So your whole presentation changes and even your being changes of who you are because those traits are now gone and other traits are put in.
Tina didn't know that you had a reading with Ion where Ion said that you actually have angel blood.
Yeah.
How many people have angel blood? Did you say 20,000?
No, it's 900,000.
No, not that many.
There is.
No, Ion said specifically.
900,000.
No, it's 200,000.
I don't want to.
I know, but he said there's only 200,000 people on the planet.
No, 900,000.
I heard two.
Sorry. It doesn't matter. It's not.
Somewhere between 2 and 900,000.
My DNA is activated to 144,000 strands. So it's as if that the service that I was in, it's no longer required or something because I've activated that. Is that coming up against you as in it was like taking your power away? You know, you wouldn't think of it like. So it means that people that are indebted to healing, it's a form of bondage because you can't get it out of you. No matter what you do, you end up going back to it all the time. And now it's as if you have the choice that you don't even have to do that anymore. My perception was behind the scenes was being in the scene. which is a very tricky place to be because you're always like drawn to finding out more and more and more of what's happening, you know, that kind of thing. Some people say to you, do you want to go off and do this? You're like, no, I'm doing my theorems, I'm doing my equations, or I'm doing a new program, I'm doing, you know, and it was constantly like I was letting my life go by because I was basically busy in service all the time. So now it's gone. So I'm so happy because I can pursue my own stuff and that's not going to be constantly like interrupting me all the time now. But I get to keep all my abilities, which is quite good. And I get to keep all my memories and all that. So. Well, it's just mad because there's so many healers out there like that are probably in the same position. And like, it's not that it's an uncomfortable position, but it's like when someone says, hang on, you have a choice here, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, whoa.
Well, it's just more that you put yourself first.
Yeah, sure. Well, you can actually start living.
Versus others.
Yeah, like you think, yeah, for the first time, I'm thinking about me rather than like, you know, like always serving.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. And even, yeah, it's just mad. So it's like, it's the whole template is like readjusting at the moment and it's readjusting in my reality and everything. So it's kind of, and then the people that want to do that, want to have that. So, I don't know. I don't think it's just about playing different games or something and then, you know, you get tired of playing one game so you swap to another. But it's interesting to see what my presentation is going to manifest when it's fully manifested, what it's going to look like. Because I've never been here fully before, so it should be kind of, I don't know. And like, because that stuff used to get me in so much trouble. Like, I used to get in so much trouble with it. Because I'd be off, oh gosh, but like, it's grand. Because, I don't know, I just feel free now, like liberated, because I don't know, I'm human as it's fully here now, and it's not like, there's not bits of me, strands of me that are like motivating me to do other things or something. Yeah, especially the empathy, because it's like the highest emotional tie that you can get, like, you know, that kind of way, because you're just like, I just think, especially for, well, not, there's no difference between male and female, but like women like tend to be like that sense of, I think it's probably like the feminine nurture or something. But it's a trap as well, like, you know what I mean? Because, I don't know, I think it's really important. Well, for me, it was really important to bring back that energy back to me because I kept giving my power away all the time. I honestly said that childbirth's over now. Like, there's going to be very few children born. Like, very few children of, say, my generation or, like, generations coming up behind me, they're not going to have children because they already had that overpowering sensations of like empathy and compassion and all that kind of stuff that they don't want to sign up for another one of that, like, you know, that kind of way.
Well, it's like, you know, how Ion says, one of the events that'll happen with the emptying of the guff is there'll be no more babies born.
Right.
There won't be births.
Because our generation has done it already. We've done the empathy part of it, the nurturing of each other.
Or is it, what's the point of having new human creators come forth to realize unrealized creations if the guff is spilled onto Earth anyway?
Yeah.
I'd like to know a little bit more about
you. We lived in a castle in Ireland for 4 months, and then we decided to come to Vancouver, which is where I'm from. Angela's from Ireland. I'm from Vancouver, Canada. I am the first person that ever had a reading with Ion. Back in the 90s, I got Bob's tapes. Someone had recorded Bob on the radio in the late 80s in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And he was doing a show there. And someone produced these tapes, 2 hours, where they mixed in Bob talking and, you know, really cool music. So my friend gave me these tapes. And he said, hey, Chad, you're into McLuhan. I think you'll understand what this guy's talking about. But I don't have a fucking clue what he's talking about. I listened to them and I was like, well, shit, he's talking about McLuhan. I'm reading McLuhan. I've been studying for a while. He's talking about James Joyce. I'm into James Joyce. He's talking about Zappa. I'm, you know, number one Zappa fan here. Like, I found some of Bob's writings on the internet. And then it went on for, you know, years of me sort of watching Bob on the internet and listening to him on interviews on the radio. And then I started corresponding with him in the late 90s. So it's been going on for a while, corresponding with Bob, and then eventually talking to him on the phone. And when Ion came through, he sent out an email to a bunch of people. I don't know if he sent out to a bunch of people or just to me and asked if I wanted a reading with this new medium that was supposed to be better than the Evergreens. And he knows that I know who the Evergreens are because I actually personally know the person who channeled the Evergreens and his wife. I was like, sure, cool, man. Like, and I had just met Dave Worster, the cosmic awareness medium from the 60s and 70s. And it was just the perfect timing. I'm like, well, that sounds cool. And we did a reading like a week later. That's how I got to Ion, just through knowing Bob. I was the first person that ever came back to Bob from the publication of his audio tapes. So Bob says I'm his number one and Ion's number one. So I'm probably one of Bob's, I don't know, I'm one of the most comprehensive students of Bob's body of work because I've been paying attention to it for a while and regurgitating it and redigesting it. And it's fun. Like, I went to university, I studied media, and I studied general arts, philosophy, psychology, everything. But as much as I tried to vary my program of study, it was still pretty anemic. And the classroom just didn't do it for me. And then when you have Bob on the radio talking about everything disappeared in 1945 and time stopped with the atomic bomb and all these things that are probes, I was like, this is fucking cool. Like, nobody else is talking about this stuff. Wake up, people. So I knew that one day I would meet Bob. I didn't know how. I just said, that guy would be somebody cool to meet. There were people I wanted to meet, and one of them was Bob, and another one would be like, I used to want to meet John Lilly, the guy who made the isolation tanks. I wanted to meet Hunter S. Thompson, and Bob was definitely on the list. I met Bob in Hawaii personally last year, March of 2009. We went hanging out at the beach. The Evergreens are one of the precursors to Ion, so... Yeah, cosmic awareness that came through Ralph Doobie in 67, 68, or 69. And that was 144 entities.
Was he taking LSD at the time?
I don't know if Ralph Doobie was, but the next medium for cosmic awareness after Ralph Doobie died was Dave Worster. And he was one of the guys responsible for just getting people turned on with LSD in the West Coast. He was involved with LSD, and then he goes until 1976, and then the Evergreens start coming through Michael Blake Reed in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I think August of 1976, and that was 6,000 to 7,000 entities. And then after the Evergreens channel for 30 years, 2004, they stop coming through Michael Blake Reed. Then you have the Willows in Toronto. I think the Willows is supposed to be 300,000 entities. And that gets you up to Ion in 2009, and Ion is zillions and zillions and zillions. Ion is an event that if you were to use the measurements that previous mediums had used to say like 144 entities or 6,000 entities coming through or that kind of thing, if Ion were to be equated in that size scale, it would be zillions. Ion's not a channeled medium, I mean channeled entities.
Explain to me what he is.
All the unrealized creations that are in the guff, meaning anytime someone, let's say, had a plan in their life where they wanted to buy a boat and sail around the world but never did it because they thought they couldn't afford it or they get away from home that long and didn't do it, well, that unrealized creation is going to get picked up by someone else who comes forth from the guff. Typically, mediums are measured in terms of how many entities they're channeling or how many bodies of intelligence. Realized creations, when you realize that you don't have to do anything to experience that which you are envisioning.
Everything you envision is real, instantly, the moment you realize that. You know, like the stuff that you create visually or in your mind or whatever you want to call it is a realized creation somewhere. And the moment you realize that's real, then you understand that it is real.
So basically, the thing about the emptying of the guff is more human creators are becoming aware of the fact that everything that they have imaged is actually real. And the guff would just be where all the places that people considered, if they consider something to be unreal or not possible, those things would be stored in the guff. The thinning of the veil and the emptying of the guff are happening in sync with the erosion of the difference between reality and unreality.
What is reality, though?
See, that's the thing. If you had that conversation with someone 30 years ago, they would say, well, the reality is what we talk about in the news. But that's reality. Did you see the movie Inception?
I haven't.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you know the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie, how they both have the same scene where Leonardo DiCaprio is washed up on the beach and he's taken in to talk to the Chinese guy? Because both of them have been in that limbo, because they were in that one dream that was supposed to go on for 10,000 years. They're in that limbo for 10,000 years, and they don't really remember who they are or where they're from anymore, where they originally came into the dream. So when he's brought in to talk to the Chinese guy, they start recognizing each other, and they're helping each other remember who they were. When Leonardo went into the fourth level dream, I think they were warning him before, like that because each deeper level of the dream, time changes. Well, I don't know if it was 10 times more or 10 to the power of 10 more, but the dream at a deeper level is so much longer that he might be stuck down there for eternity, basically. So I didn't see it as he just went down to the fourth level and immediately was at the beach. I thought that they were preparing us to think that he's going to be down there for eternity so long, he won't even remember why he's in the dream. So then when he went to talk to the Chinese guy, he didn't even remember who he was. He just recognized there was something about that Chinese guy, and the Chinese recognized something about him. And then there was that little totem object, and the totem object was sort of igniting. Yeah, it was a clue, that, and they were starting to put their memory back together. So the reason why I brought that up, specifically that example, it's like that's what we're all doing, is helping each other remember. We're not helping each other remember. We're coming into our remembrance sort of simultaneously of who we are.
What I got from it is that no matter what your body looks like, they had been there, and some of them had been in eternity, and some of them had been there for like 2 years. And they emotionally and spiritually or whatever, they had endured that length of time, and yet when they come back into that other dream, their body hasn't even changed, yet their place of knowing has, or their place of experience or interpretation has, because of where they've been. Yeah, like if you spend 1,000 years somewhere and then you come back the next moment and you're in a different feeling place or a different perspective, but your body's still the same. But for me, that was the most powerful thing in the film. It's like how ancient a soul is, and physicality doesn't matter, you know, that kind of way. It's the journey, the experience of the mind, whether it's physically real or a dream or anything, it's, your feeling place changes, whether it's physical or not, you know, that kind of way.
He woke up, but him and this Chinese guy woke up at the same time and unplugged themselves, and everyone else was just like, oh, hum, oh, hum, oh, hum.
Exactly. And they come back with that knowing of that length of eternity, and they recognize that in each other. So when you meet people and you recognize things in their eyes, it's like that kind of silent recognition of where you've been, you know, that strikes affinity, and you know, like you get akin to someone because they're on the same wavelength, but only each other knows how they got to that wavelength and back again, kind of thing. That's what I liked about the movie.
You'll see things in the movie that they create like a physical representation of some of the things that have been subtly touched on and developed
and bring into new place.
Yeah. Now, mind you, of course, it's a movie, so there's unnecessary drama and contrast doesn't necessarily reflect how freely and easily things can be experienced. What I've found is coming into your place of power isn't some big end-all. It's just an adjustment. You can keep adjusting yourself. You fine-tune. On the old TV set, they used to have the thing where you could change the channel, but then you could also do the fine adjustment between the channels. So the fine-tuning, the levels of fine-tuning, get like you go from coarse-grained control of your relationship with your power to fine-tuning the control, where it's just a matter of like turning your head a couple degrees and you're back on course.
It was almost like having to relearn English again, because the English that we were taught is like
full of limiting beliefs.
Yeah, limiting beliefs.
Well, like the word until is not the same as the word till. The word till predates the word until. So in the English language, before the printing press came out, they used the word till, which meant to. You could use it interchangeably with the word to, like T-O. The word until didn't come out until, like the first recorded uses of it was around the 14th century or 15th century, the word until. From what I read, they don't even really have the same etymological root. We think they're the same word, but they're not. They don't come from the same etymological root. And the word until, to me, means to like until the soil. You can't until the soil. If you're a farmer and you till your soil to turn it over, to plant new seeds, to harvest the seeds, once you've tilled the soil, you can't until it. Once you started overlaying a new level of your experience, you can't un-overlay it. just like you can't untill a field. If you've turned over all the soil, you can't go down and go back and put every little piece of soil back where it was. See, until, again, it's a word that the language tangles for people on, because the word is based on a false premise. You can't untill something. Once you've tilled your field and turned over the soil, you can't undo that.
So once you've done something or created something, it's done. And if you don't like it, rather than going back and trying to untill it, what you do is you overlay it.
You put another layer of soil down.
And then you start again.
And then you start again. You till that soil.
Instead of it's a hard way.
Oh, it's interesting because hard drives, before I go to that, so with regard to the word till and until, if you say, I'm going to stay here till my money check arrives, for example, that's fine. If you say, I'm going to stay here until my money check arrives, then that would be an untilling of the overlaying of you seeing your money check arrive, which is already a realized creation in progress of you seeing it. So if you use the word till, you take the negative out of it, because we're dealing with pure positive here, where everything is created and nothing is somewhere else. It's all created here now. There's no container for it anymore because the guff doesn't have any more room.
It's the masterminding of words to realize, unrealize.
But with the word until, and if you use a farm as a metaphor to describe the process of creation, every year the farmer goes out and tills the soil. Prepare it for the sowing of seeds. That would be analogous to creating anything, because you're making, first you make room for it in your life, and then you plant the seed of the word.
If you're in the now and you're dwelling about something that you feel regret about, you're untelling that thing, but you're not in your now anymore. You're losing yourself to the past, even though there's no past. You're losing yourself to another moment, when the moment that you're in, if you weren't untilling, is a brand new moment. And no untilling will ever change it. Like, because, you know, some people might spend 20 years regretting something in their whole life because they're in a state of regret, or something didn't work the way they wanted it to work. So they're going, until that's resolved in my mind, I can't carry on. You know, that kind of way or something. And then it's every moment is a new moment. So that moment is gone. So it's bringing it to the delay.
Stuck in that past place of whatever,
exactly.
What choice they made created the regret, and then they hold on to it, and then all their choices following them in the regret state of mind create more regret.
Yeah, because the moment you create something, it's created, and no one telling will ever uncreate that. So rather than dwelling in it, you just move on and create a new now.
Oh, here's an interesting thing about hard drives on your computer. They're magnetic hard drives. There actually is no delete on a hard drive. There is a delete function, but it's not what people think it is. People think delete means erase or take it off completely. Well, actually, hard drives are full of, you know, ones and zeros when you get down to it, the organized ones and zeros creating the information that you work with. Well, when you delete something on Windows or Mac, all it is doing is it's making those sectors or those clusters of ones and zeros, making them available to be overwritten. So it's freeing them up to be overlaid, but they're still there. They don't get deleted. So nothing's ever removed from a hard drive, only overlaid upon. It's always still there, even after a fire. It's magnetically in there.
Yeah.
The only way you can make the information on your hard drive completely unavailable is by doing what's called the zero fill, where they rewrite the whole hard drive going 01, 01, 01 all the way over every piece of the hard drive. You could still have fragments of data. Formatting still doesn't do it. If you're using Department of Defense level formatting, their standard calls for zero fill is the only acceptable level of formatting. But just conventional consumer goods, formatting doesn't do zero fill. All it does is reallocate the space that was allocated previously and says this space is now up for use, for overwriting. And it may defragment a little bit. It may move the pieces of information and put them in a tight, defragmented order, but it doesn't guarantee you that it's gone.
But that's a metaphor for real-life creations, that the moment that you create something or image something or think something, it's created, and no untilling or uncreating will ever remove it. So once something is created, it's always there. And if you're not happy with it, it's not about having regret over it. It's just about saying, okay, grand, it's floating around somewhere there, and I'm creating a new now.
New stacks of now. Stack it up, overlay on top of it.
Yeah.
And you get so busy on your new levels of overlaid reality or your overlaid experience that you don't even remember any kind of like contrast that you had at another level.
So every moment's a new now. So you might wake up tomorrow and have like the most amazing, anomalous day where you do like the most random things that you've never imagined, because you're opening yourself up to new experiences that no regrets or past experiences are controlling. The first memory I have within my experience, and no one can tell me different, is walking down a hill in this like electric multicolored world where everything is colorful. Like it's like in a sea of color, and everyone's in bubbles, and everyone has different color bubbles, and then there's like different organisms floating around within bubbles, and they're all like animated and stuff. But that's my first memory of coming here, and yet my mother and family have memories of me being born. So if I don't register those memories, then to me they can't tell me their version, their perspective of being born. So to me that was my birth, if that makes sense. So I wasn't born in my world. The first memory I have, as in, like, that's like the first jump, the first one, the furthest one, is I'm walking down a hill and I'm in a bubble. The normal scene is there, but it's like you're under the sea of colour. So it's like the scene is, it's like a sea of colour, whilst the terrain is there, what your normal eye would see, like 3D kind of thing. But all of the other planes are filled in with all these beautiful colours. And so as you walk through a different area in the scene, like you might have a blue color, so you'll experience the blue world, or you might go over there and you'll experience like a pink world, and then it's all multicolored and different. It's just a life of color. And then it's when people are there all in big bubbles, and then you can see all the different colors within their bubbles, you know what they are. And then there's non-physical bubbles that have like organisms within them, they're all moving, and as you watch, you can see them animating everything. The dreams that I had, it's almost like breathology. You live on colour, and you can like take one of these like bubbles and you can like embody it, and you can experience the perspective that that organism experiences reality too and stuff. That was my first memory of coming here. As I got more acclimatized and took on other people's rules of what this reality is, that all went away then. And then, yeah, so I don't know, that's like my true perspective.
In other words, she was saying that she has no memory of being birthed, and she knows that she wasn't birthed. That's how she came forth.
All I know is that the body that I am there in ratio is smaller, and it's the exact same body that I'm in now, except the ratio is taller here. But that level of colour in the world is brilliant, and everyone can have that here. Like, you know, then you get programmed as a child, what is that? And it's a cup or it's a chair. What colour is the sun? And then it becomes just the one colour, yellow, rather than all the colours that you can see. You know, that kind of way. And then that's reaffirmed over and over and over until that becomes your experience. A few colours rather than all the colours that was actually there. And then it goes away. When you get to the levels of like breathology, or if you take people that take acid or any sort of stuff like that, like those senses, they're all opened up again. But they're your original senses before you're modeled into whatever you're being modeled into, sort of, when your power has been taken from you. So then it's like unmodeling their creation, taking back your power, and then becoming who you are, or in the now. Is it?
No, no, it's up to you.
Yeah, it's cool. It's for everyone to play, really.
My first memory is getting electrocuted underneath the Christmas tree. That was my welcome to life, was I got zapped on the fingers because I touched the electrical socket.
Oh, yeah, the electrician in Ireland told me that he got electrocuted off a big thing, and he actually lifted him into the air.
Mm-hmm.
The current, yeah. He was on like a tree phase thing, and it lifted him. He flew with it. It cuts the grief or the memory on the synapse, is it? Did you ever have dreams where you're being like electrocuted in your bed just right before you come back? You're lying in bed and your whole body is in this intense vibrational pulse thing. And the other thing I find is that to tune your wavelength or tune any sort of like started that's been dropped or something. When you're singing, the tone of a sound, how smooth it is, determines what's the physiology of the being or something. And that's another way of tuning the sound. If you're ever in a down mood or a bad trip now or something, you can actually sing yourself out of it just by making one long tone. And then grinding up the tone.
Couldn't you just feel what the tone is?
For me, if
I'm walking down the street and I decide to make myself feel a little bit better, sometimes I'll just hear a tone in my head and I'm like, oh, that's a pretty appealing tone. See, I don't think it has anything to do with the number of the frequency or anything like that. I think if there's a sound that is illuminated to you and you engage with it physically, there's something, I think, that connects you to your non-physical more readily.
Well, it's a link into a new note.
For me, anyways, it continues an experience just from a parallel world where I was, but then I eventually come back into my world.
It's like, say, like 2 weeks ago, I placed the symbol in a particular coffee shop eating a particular thing. And then I go off on a mad journey full of anomalies and I travel within my perspective and I travel. And then at any point, I can go back into that symbol or image that symbol and I can get that link back to that mentality I was in or that perspective I was in and then go off and branch again. It's cool because they're just tracking points. They're links.
Do you consider that portaling?
It's a mind placeholder, a perspective placeholder. The physical traveling, that I'm working on that now. It's like they're two different things. Like I think I once called it wishy-washy spiritualism or something.
Can I tell you how it works for me, though? I don't stand in front of something and say, open sesame. To me, it's like I place my orders in advance. I put out my orders. So it's like, yeah, I want to go to that castle. I want to go to Mexico. I want to go to this place. I want to go to that place. I'm saying, okay, I could see myself going there. Okay, I'll allow myself to go there. Okay, I'll allow myself to go there. And then there's no real order to it. They don't show up in the same order that I thought about them or that I commanded them. But as they come up, I find myself going through them. You could call it slipping through them or whatever, but I don't really care when I go through the portal. To me, it doesn't matter what order I experience them in.
Well, I'm driving for that's cool, open, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not into this, going off and, I want it now.
I'm too busy pleasing myself with all this bliss to be concerned about, desiring and manifesting all in one move. To me, my desiring is very subtle, where it's just I see something on mine, and I'd be like, I'd allow myself to have that. That would be very good. And then it's gone. I let it go, and it might show up a week later. It might show up a year later. I don't care. The reason why I said it the way I said it is because Angela wants to go out to the backyard and she wants to look at the fence and the fence turns into a portal. Whereas me, I've never done it that way. I'm always going through portals and it's like somebody wandering around through the subway system just for the fun of riding the subway. It's like, it's Sunday. I have nothing to do. I'm going to hop on number 22. I ride number 22 and get off that. And it's like, what do we have? Number 76, number 43. I'll take number 44. Let's see where that goes. Oh, cool. I'm in Coney Island. That's great. But I saw all kinds of interesting things on my journey back from Europe. When I was in O'Hare Airport, I was connecting. So I had to go from, I think, Terminal 3 to Terminal 1. I turned the corner and I saw this big, long corridor with all these neon lights that are zigzaggy on the ceiling and the walls, and there's mirrors, I think, and there's one of those long moving sidewalks. And I turned the corner and there was nobody there. I was in a crowd of people, but I turned and there was nobody in the corridor, and it felt so eerie. I'm like, what the hell? There's something weird about this. So I pulled out my iPhone and I took a picture of the corridor because it was just so strange. There was no one there. And then when I got back to Vancouver and uploaded my pictures onto my computer, I looked at the picture that I took and I'm like, what the hell? It was full of people.
Scott, you know, you were talking about the physical door or the portal and walking instantly through it. Before the music came on, we were talking about the door, open sesame thing. I was doing this thing last night and it was like trying to tune into the dimension of where I was trying to get someone from the place that I'm trying to go through the portal to come knock on the door here. No thoughts to like interfere with the changing up the now. So I was playing with it last night and you're intensely focused and then all you can see is the portal in front of you and everything else is blocked out. So do you walk forward in that moment? Because you're no longer in that physical world that you once were. You're in a new world. Well, I was trying this thing last night, like tuning in, you know, in the, you're shifting dimensions of the physical room and the walls are moving and the objects are moving and all of that. So you're moving into different parallels within the room. But all you're doing is moving into a different parallel and watching it. But I was trying to get someone from the location that I'm going through, the portal, to come knock on the door. So I have to tune in on the string that they were, that they're on. So I could hear a coherent physical knock.
When you do that, okay, you go all the way to those people. You allow yourself to bilocate to where you actually see them right there. You have to ensure that you have their attention if you're asking for cooperation from others. And when they do that, you'll see them arrive. I do that actually quite a bit.
And do you see the impression of them and then the physicality?
No, I want to see them face-to-face, three-dimensional.
Yeah, me too. I wasn't thinking up last night, so I just went into another world, and then it's as real as being there. Anyhow, but I kind of, but I want to go past that now and actually physically engage. And then I was going through the thing where, okay, so I'm in one room, and the parallel me is in another room. So if I portal into that, when will there be two of me? But did the two of those bodies blend together, or is there two? Is there each now has its own?
If you wish.
I say I'm here in my body now, and then I'm here, I'm there, and I can see myself in another scene. So if I portaled into that scene, would there be two of me, or would
you're
I blend
there.
Into that?
If you can see yourself in that scene, you're already there. There's no reason to portal, because you're there. You just didn't
and
know
how
it.
Do you bring that into the now, then?
I think, as Ion would say, the words are the tell, and Angela, you said, how do I bring that into the now? Yeah, that's why you're separate, because you're saying that you have to bring that into the now, whereas Ion also says, what you see is not real and what you don't see is real. If you are seeing the castle and that's where you want your is to be, then you don't have to bring that into the now because that will be your new now.
I'll give you another example, right? So say on the other side of the portal, there's a scene. So I want to bring this body through the portal into that scene. Physically, but that's a different sensation to what we were talking about just there.
So what you're wanting to do is to merge your physicality of your now with the physicality that is also present and now in a parallel world.
Yeah, because I can overlay it. I did that for a solid year. Like, I'm one of the most adventurous travelers you could find in non-physical, or I don't know what you call it, in eternity or whatever. And I can overlay the experience that it becomes, like, real in that room. But still, underneath it is that room, you know? So that's why I'm, at the moment, I'm trying to get the portal open to walk straight through that, into that other now.
You
I know,
just, like, walk into weird. Each other and go, whoops, excuse me, I bumped you, sorry.
He does it a bit already because one time in Ireland there was three Chads in my bedroom, three versions of Chad in the room, separate bodies. And apparently, Ion was saying that the different versions are fighting for the most desirable version, which is in the place of power. So there's, like, versions of you where you're like, you know, and then there's versions of you where you're completely, like, up in the now and alive and awake. And obviously they're more favourable with other parallels of other beings. So there's a whole dynamic even within oneself, like, without having exterior people. So you can have communication with different, with yous and different nows or one,
uh-huh.
You know. Yeah, and that's so interesting. The way I do it is I do videos. So as I record that video, there's no time. So I might have like 20 different me's watching that. The geometrics of that now is me in a geometric of 20 or something like that, in the layout of 20, even though there's only me. So my reference point is there's no time. So my I'm addressing 20 of me's worth, engaging with me as I required it. So all those me's can ask me questions, and then I can put that into the conversation just by letting go or something.
Angela, how do you like being out of Ireland?
Yeah, it's mad. Because we were in the castle, and Chad said he wanted to go for a walk in Vancouver. Now we're here. I know the castle is brilliant, but it was, you know, when you're in the countryside and there's not much, like, city. Ireland, there's only really, like, Dublin. And, like, Kilkenny was, like, a city close to us, but it'd be small, kind of thing. So I think Chad wanted to walk his own. He wanted to come back to his tree and all this kind of stuff. So
I wanted to come back to big city modern amenities.
Yeah. I know, it's good. Like, Ireland's cool. So, but, I don't know. No, Vancouver is edgy, like, it's kind of, when I came here first, everything, I was, like, amused with everything. Isn't it? There was even, like, leaves on the cement, you know, when you're walking on the ground and spotting the patch or the pavement stuff.
They put these molds into the concrete on the sidewalk. When they pour a sidewalk here, they put, like, cookie cutters of leaves. It always looks like there's leaves on the ground on the sidewalks.
Yeah, and everything's so bright. There's lights everywhere. People, we're living in a rainbow community, so it's cool. You've walked in, you see, like transvestites, and it's just brilliant. It's just, it's alive, like, it's electric. I lived in London before, but it's good now.
I took her to my tree. The thing about Vancouver, it's such a great merging of nature and the city. You've got trees everywhere.
And he brought me to a nudist beach, is that? And, oh, my gosh, sure, I didn't. Some fella came over, and he was doing tarot reading.
How far is it to the country?
It's huge forest. Stanley Park is a huge, huge forest. Like, it would take you a day to walk around it.
Yeah.
And then there's Pacific Spirit Park, which is a massive forest full of huge hemlock trees. It bumps up against the ocean. Like, you've got forest that meets the ocean.
Cool.
And if you really want to go into the wilderness, all you have to do is take the city bus 20 minutes north of the city. There's even bears out there, so.
All the beaches there. Oh, no, that one beach is the nudist beach. Gosh.
I took her to the major nudist beach here. Well, it's not a nudist beach. It's clothing optional. So, like, half the people there are nude. Women can walk around in British Columbia with no tops on. There's even signs up that say, like, just so you know, it's legal to walk around without upper body garments in British Columbia.
Wow.
I think they do that in Ontario, too, another province in Canada. They made a law about 10 years ago that it's okay for women to also take their shirts off.
What percentage of women do it?
Oh, not many. You mostly see it on beaches. Occasionally, you'll see a woman sunbathing with the top off. When the law first came out in Ontario, there were some women who were taking the opportunity to bare all, and they walk down the streets with their top off for, you know, for the first month or so that it came out, then the novelty wore off.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm from Ireland. I wouldn't have a clue about this. Like, you'd be locked up. You'd be put into a hospital if you're doing that.
I was joking around with Angela because Vancouver, the airport code is YVR. The whole VR thing, virtual reality. Before I came to Vancouver the first time, I had a whole vision of how it was in my mind. That was before you had sites where you could go on and see a city with a virtual tour. So I had only seen Vancouver through television. And when I got here, it was exactly like I saw it in my mind. It's kind of like I designed the city because it's like things that I think would be kind of cool that weren't here. They show up really fast. Like the one thing was, I was like, the university campus should have free internet for everybody, like even visitors. Last summer that I was here, didn't have it. And then when I got back this summer, I was like, big signs, free internet all over UBC.
Yeah, and even have plugs outside in the garden.
Like it's basically like free society is really picking up here, where there's so many things that are available for free.
And like there was a homeless person, and he had a skateboard and a laptop, and he was just sitting there homeless. Did he have a dog as well? And like he didn't look homeless. Like he was sitting there, like laptop on a skateboard, typing away like. On the side of the street. It's just mad.
Yeah, the homeless people have nice shoes here, too.
Yeah.
They'll have nice, clean shoes.
Well, it's the summer time, so I don't know what I'd be like.
She's in Chad's Vancouver.
Yeah, I'm in visitor's Vancouver.
It's like my Willy Wonka chocolate factory. So some things might not make sense to other people, but they do to me.
Like in Ireland, I used to bring them to
the downtown east side of Vancouver, that's what they call Skid Row. That's where you've got most of the homeless people congregate in big groups. There's a lot of things down there where they can get stuff for free. They can even get nice clothes, not just secondhand clothes, but overruns and stuff like that are available for them. Last night, we saw some homeless people sitting on a park bench on our street, and they were eating Kentucky Fried Chicken.
A fella, and he was walking, and he had the best clothes on. Like, he was really nice. Honestly, they were nice clothes. Like, and then he was there, and he was picking up cigarette butts off the ground.
More people wear rubber boots in the city here than they do in Ireland.
In the country.
If you've been to Ireland, you'll notice there's a lot of farms. Farmers tend to wear rubber boots.
Wellies.
Because it's practical. They call them wellies. And Angela was amazed to see that these utility boots are in fashion here. You'll get, you know, young ladies wearing these nice designer rubber boots that maybe have a glossy finish on them.
Wellies.
Maybe they have little rainbows or unicorns on them. Or they're bright yellow. But another good thing about rubber boots is if you get hit by lightning, doesn't it reduce the flow of current? Another thing about Vancouver is we had the Olympics here, the Winter Olympics in February. They did a massive, like, renovation on the city. Half the city's brand new now. Everything's been rebuilt and redesigned. And they have this clock that was counting down the days and minutes and seconds to the Olympics. Now the clock is at 0000000000. It's like the end of time. It's cool.
Yeah.
I like the zeros on the clock. It reminds me of which Vancouver I'm in. Because there's the Vancouver where I was wanting to go to Europe and live in a castle. And then now this is a different one where I did that and I'm in a different place. And Angela's here now instead of me being imagining her.
What's your visa policy?
In Canada, a visitor gets 6 months, which is good because normally, like in Europe and in the U.S., visitors get 3 months on the guest visa. Then after the 6 months, we can just drive over to Washington State and hang out there for a couple of days and come back.
Or I can go see my mother.
Or she can go somewhere and come back and then get another 6 months.
We can move somewhere, like Hawaii.
Angela wants to go to Hawaii. So. Since I'm Canadian, I can stay in the U.S. for 6 months on an initial tourist visa. Angela would get 3.
Yeah, but it's a good excuse to keep traveling.
And now all my income now is online based, so I don't have to stay anywhere anymore. For 2 years now, I think, you have to have, even in ground entrances back and forth, you have to have your passport. Because there was a big run on passports when that law came in.
You'll be traveling physically by then, anyhow. You'll be portaling by then. Physically portaling.
She said portaling. You'll be portaling, so you won't have to go through the border anyway. Otherwise, you end up like what happened to me when I was traveling through Europe. I landed in Frankfurt, and when I got to Frankfurt, they stamped my passport on entry into the EU. Then I flew to Rome on just a connecting flight, which was my destination. When I got to Rome, I got off the plane, and I didn't even see anywhere to go through to get entry into Italy. So I just went to the luggage carousel, grabbed my baggage, and my relatives met me, and I was out of the airport. No stamp. Even though I had entered the EU already, I was expecting that the authorities in Italy would stamp me to show that I entered Italy. But when I entered Italy, I wasn't corralled into an area to get entered into Italy. It was just got off the plane, there's your baggage, and then there's the exit, and there was my relatives. So they picked me up, and I went. And so I didn't get stamped in Italy. And then I flew from Italy a month later into the Netherlands. And then when I landed in the Netherlands, nobody stamped my passport again. And then when I stayed in the Netherlands for a few months, and when I went to Ireland, when I went to leave the Netherlands, the border guard said, the EU passport guy, he's like, you have no record of entering the Netherlands. How long have you been here? How did you get here? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I landed in Rotterdam Airport, and then nobody took my passport to stamp it. And they said, that's impossible. There's no way. And I was like, well,
happened.
I didn't see anything.
So, Chad, what do you think happened?
I brought it up in a tailgate a few months ago when Ion was on them, and Ion said, yeah, because when you entered into the Netherlands the first time and didn't get passport stamped, you were in a different version or a different world where they don't do that.
Did the guard give you more of a hard time, or he just had to let you go?
He just had to let me go through. I made it happen. I made him do it.
I wonder how often that kind of stuff happens.
All the time. It's mad. But I'm not going to talk about that. If I talk about it, the music will come back on again.
Oh, and you guys, I so agree with you about learning a new vocabulary.
Even my little baby sister in England is saying it. She's like, I can't talk anymore. Everything's coming out. All like, and I don't know what words to use anymore. And she's not even into this. Like, but she's like, every time I try to talk or I hear myself talking, I sound ridiculous. I can't talk anymore.
No. And I don't know how to ask questions if I ever need to ask a question.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? It's really good. So everyone must be experiencing that because, you know, she wouldn't even be into that. So, it's, you know, I don't know.
Why is she conscious then if she's not even into it?
Like, everyone is into it. They're just not aware of it. So, you know the way, like, waves are coming and certain people are, they'll pick them up some way. Because, like, as this now evolves outside of time, outside of death, outside of birth, outside of everything, it's impacted into the whole of society, like. It ripples, like. You know, it's shown up on TV, it's shown up. The more, like, anomalous stuff, activities we bring down, then that becomes the new norm. And then you keep building and building on greater and greater, it's not deadly. I love speed, like, I love doing things really fast, because then you get, like, the adrenaline even faster. Where some people like going really slow. So it just depends where in the wave you want to be like.
And I liked your discussion of until. My suspicion of how un got put with till, it is a way to manipulate positive language into something negative, so to prevent a creation.
Yeah. But that's, I don't know if this is the right thing, I'll just go with it though. You know, like the alchemists and the wizards and the occultists and all the folks. They used to be, like, climbing for greater and greater levels of power or whatever.
Yeah.
And they'd show different ciphers and different... It's part of the masterminding and different associations and affiliations with learning the different ciphers. And
perhaps Angela's onto something, like wizards or magicians or whoever threw it into vocabulary for unknowing people to adopt so their creations would never stick because they're saying the incorrect words.
Yeah, and even, like, lawyers and solicitors, or whatever you call them, judges, it's all a battle of words. Everything is the wording, you know. Like, the command of language is the command of getting information from someone, or, like, and, like, before, people couldn't express themselves, so there was a lot more violence, and I don't know if evolution even, if there is even evolution, but as the now continues, people are grasping language more and more because they understand what language is now. And even the initial language is old because it's obsolete, so it's like a new language has been learnt, and then that will become old, and then another language will be learnt. But then there's the whole thing about, like, everyone has their own dictionary of what each word is anyhow, so everyone hears their own thing.
It's like my words are getting so limited now.
It's so hard to formulate a sentence, isn't it? Like,
it is.
And then you're in the middle of saying something, it's like, oh, no, no, no. And it's almost turned, like, for me, it's like a stammer or something. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
If I slow down, become easier, kind of thing. And you can't just get away with blabbing anymore. Like.
No, I was just going to say that I'm a lot more quiet because I'm just trying to think of how I would say a sentence.
Yeah.
Keep your ideas to yourself until they're fully developed. My conversation with Bob the other day, what was I on saying that Bob just blabs anyway because he's not trying to communicate. He knows that talking to other people is not for the purpose of trying to get someone else to understand what you're saying. You're talking for your own ears, so it doesn't matter if you're blabbing or not. So it's like a balancing act between keeping your ideas to yourself until they're fully developed because you know how powerful your words are, and also letting that river flow out of your mouth without shooting yourself in the foot?
I think that only works if you believe that words are perfect, because if one doesn't subscribe to that, then I don't know, would it necessarily work? Like. But then if you fully believe in the command of words, then you master the language, then you watch reality move around you.
It's almost like just getting into your groove, getting to the point where you can continue to talk and talk and talk, and you're talking about the things from a place of appreciation, evoking and all that kind of stuff, without having that sensor that could step into your, from your mind, stopping the flow of words for fear of saying something that's going to try to de-manifest something you've created, or taking your creations into a place where you don't really want to go. It's like a rapper, you know, how some of the rappers can just, when they're doing improv, they flow and flow and flow, and you're like, wow, I can't believe how they just can keep rhyming and keep flowing with it.
But there's something about when you realize the power of the word, that you almost become dumb, as in you don't talk. There's something about that as well. When you're sitting in your place of power and you literally watch your thoughts ripple across the now and come back and be present, then watching that power, you become dumb, and then you harness language or something.
Yeah, and once you realize that your words can create what you want, then it's like, oh, wow. My whole life, I thought I actually had to do stuff to get things to be created. Well, now that I know that I can just talk them into existence, well, I better get started, because I got a whole lot of things that I want, or that I enjoy, or that I appreciate, that I'd love to have in my experience.
And even like when you're at a juncture and you're like, okay, which parallel am I going to go into? Which experience do I choose to enjoy within this now? You know, your thoughts can bring you, you can go on the crest up into that parallel, or go on the crest into that parallel. So it's almost like your thoughts are lining up what parallel you're about to go into, or you can voice say it, sure. And if you're on a high, then you're literally brought on a line into that high door, and you walk into that now in that high door, or you walk into a parallel in a, you might be in a bad mood and you walk into the bad mood parallel. So it's like lining up. That's what I call it, thinking up or lining up. Which one, which experience you're choosing. And then I'm sure you can like even bring it even more like miraculous or something, that it's like to the people are actually walking up to you and going, hello, welcome, we know your name and we know everything about you, you know, that kind of thing. Like, all these parallels are there if you just, if I believe it. Like, the yesterdays or the old nows, you know, what the underlay of reality, the underlay of the now, which is like the past or whatever, like that's the past. So nothing stopping you taking a big, massive jump, either, like, in the new now, when there's no labyrinth or mind dictating or telling you what way it should be, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, basically, it's like Bob said one time, Ion is your butler. Non-physical is your butler, your concierge. You want something, you just call for it, command it.
When you really want something, it seems to push out.
You can focus on a window with your eyes to look out the window and see something outside the window that you want. Or you can push on the window and fall out the window. You can focus on what you want. That'd be like looking out the window. If you try to do action, you're pushing on the window. The focusing is your intention. You're focusing your intention on what you want without pushing with your hands.
When you're really, really happy and you're just walking along, everything shows up like. You just think it, and then it's there. You know, that kind of thing, depending on what height of energy is the duration of when it shows up like.
You know when you have an animal, and you're trying to get the animal to do something it doesn't want to do? You couldn't force it for anything, you know? Like, you just couldn't make it do it. If you know how to, like, lure the cat back into the house, it's different than pushing and trying to grab the cat and bring it in the house. It's not, it won't come. It'll scratch your eyes out. Like I said, animals are purely non-physical, right?
Yeah.
So they're a good example of how to interact with non-physical. Oh, our dish towel went missing in the kitchen. Our dish towel ended up in a different, we ended up in a different world than our dish towel is. I washed something in the sink and then I dried it off with the dish towel and I put the dish towel back on the hanger, or whatever, the rod. And then I went about, you know, preparing the food again. And then I turned around to get the dish towel and it was gone. And we have searched every corner of the place looking for it. It's not here.
And just think of all the frustration that people have when that stuff happens. You generally get frustrated and worked up, and that could all be alleviated if people understood all the different dynamics available. Matthew told me earlier that he listened to Rushflow from November, last November, and he heard Ion make a reference to him and the check cashing business.
And is this the same Matthew that was on Cashflow talking about the school crossing in front of his house?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I went to go check that out a couple weeks ago.
What was that like? Did it have strangeness to it?
The whole block was, it's like this interdimensional Grand Central or Chicago O'Hare. It was just weird. Wait, what's a good word? It's not the dregs of the intergalactic society. Just weirdos. People on crutches and in wheelchairs and with big warts hanging off their face.
That sounds like Skid Row here in Vancouver. My theory is that a lot of the people that are in Skid Row here are travelers that got lost. Ion mentioned that. I think in my second reading, he mentioned something about homeless people. We were talking about how people might come up to me in the street randomly and start talking to me. And then he mentioned something about these homeless people, even though they might be coming and asking you for change or for cigarettes or something, that's not really why they're coming up to me.
Why are they coming up to you?
Well, I think in that reading it had something to do with because I have some light or something around me. They see I'm different. And so I'm like, if you were on death row, they wouldn't be approaching you because there's something you haven't been doing right. But obviously, since you're not on death row and you're out there walking around glowing, they think, oh, this person must know something. Maybe they can help me get back home or give me a link or maybe they'll say something that reminds me of who I am or something. They're reminding them of their non-physical that is in all of us or something like that.
The ones that are talking quote-unquote crazy, I always listen to and sometimes try to engage because I just know that's coming from somewhere else.
Yeah, well, they're just letting it flow out of their mouth. It's funny because you take the bus here, you take transit, most of the people are absolutely silent when they're traveling.
Uh-huh.
And occasionally you get some homeless person get on the bus and they just start talking and talking and talking. People either try to ignore them or maybe they'll be, you know, courteous with them. It's interesting, these people that are out in the streets, homeless, they seem to just talk to anybody, say anything, whereas the people
yeah.
who are in transit from work to home, they look like they're all bound up.
In the dog park last weekend, there was this lady totally running and playing and engaging with the dog. Like you said, everybody else, all the quote-unquote normal people are sitting on the edge, smoking, reading the paper, letting their dogs run around. She's in the middle with them. So I just assumed she's a dog owner. I stayed basically to the end. So I was one of the last dogs there. When I took mine, she had to leave. I said, "Where's your dog?" She goes, "Oh, I don't have a dog. I'm just a crazy person, and I love to play with the dog. I'm homeless." And I'm like, "How cool are you?"
Well, I saw a lady sitting in the park, the homeless lady, a couple of days ago. She was sitting there covered in pigeons and covered in pigeons. Pigeon shit and everything, but the pigeons come up to her, and there you go again with attracting animals into your presence. We have a skunk that every night comes outside our door, every night. I was in the sushi place when I was eating my food, and then I had this feeling that I had to look out the window into the street, and when I looked out the window, I saw the skunk crossing the middle of the busy street.
No way.
And then I went,
I was like, oh no, you gotta go, run.
And then he made it across the street, but it was funny that it was like a communicator. I got something from the skunk to notice that he was about to be killed.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we had a squirrel that walks right into our kitchen. We had a cat come in through the window last. The squirrel followed us all the way down the sidewalk.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. I see that.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, friend. And he's like running behind me like a cat.
Squirrels are squirrely, and they avoid people.
Now, there's an example of something I really want. I would love a squirrel in my kitchen. So since I want it, it's not going to come.
Pam, we weren't wanting it.
That's my point.
Stop wanting it. Do something that'll get you over your wanting. Like do some activation action that is basically meaningless other than to get you over this wanting feeling. Go ring a bell or do something. You know what you could do, Pam? You could cut a picture of a squirrel out of a magazine
and
like, put it in the kitchen down by the floorboard.
So what did you guys do with the squirrel in your kitchen?
Nothing. We just talked to
it. Oh, I just took it out to the couch. He was great in the kitchen, and he was there, like, just kind of hopping around.
The squirrel was standing up on his two hind legs.
We were drinking champagne in here with a friend, and we just looked out the door, and the little squirrel was putting his head around the thing going,
oh,
yeah,
my
he was
God.
Standing up with his hands folded, like, looking around the corner of him.
Some people don't like squirrels. I love them. Well, it was hilarious yesterday because we were walking up the road and this little thing is going full speed behind us. Like, the little feet are going, Oh, it was nice. But I don't know. They're mostly in the wild. All animals kind of do that to you, really, though, don't they? They just kind of come up. It's like some of them you don't want them to come up with. Like cows. Cows are dangerous. People don't know that. Yeah.
Cows are?
Oh, yeah. I really got trampled by a herd of cows. Yeah, I hate them. Can't stand them. Shit. I was wearing all right. I shot through a bull and they chased me. I ran through barbed wire and I ran through a rusty gate and then I got electrocuted 3 times on electric wire trying to get away from them.
I've heard some of your discussions about portaling.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard you texting a question a few weeks ago. You heard something in an archive where I was describing traveling and I don't remember what the question was.
Yeah, I specifically used your name. I hope you don't mind. I was asking about Natalie Portman because you mentioned her in an archive.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't mind. My God, Ryan talked about how I show up naked at JW's house. I've been completely exposed, so we have nothing to hide anymore.
So you could consciously travel there?
To where?
JW's house.
Yeah, we were talking a couple hours ago about different ways of approaching it. Like, Angela wants to just basically walk up to a portal and then say, okay, I want to go there. Whereas with me, the desire to go somewhere and the manifestation of the portal don't necessarily happen together. It can, but I think mostly for me, it's just kind of like I'm just going through life and I'll find myself somewhere and I'll go, how the hell did I get here? And I'll be like, oh, okay, now I remember how I got here. Oh, okay. I remember the place I was at when I desired to be here. A lot of the symbol stuff that I talked about came from my readings. We developed this symbol navigational system. I don't know if you heard any of that stuff about the symbols and the clock face that has 13 slots. And the position of the symbols has something to do with getting back. I was asking questions about traveling and the symbols that I had been receiving. The first symbols I received were in dreams. I was emailing with Bob, and I mentioned that, oh, now Ion's sending me symbols in my dreams. And then Bob must have told Ion, and then Ion told Bob to tell me to start sending them the symbols if I wanted to. And I was like, I didn't know what they were, so I started sending them. And then the symbols started coming like crazy until I got to the point where I had like, by the time I was on tailgate, I had like 30 symbols that I had saved up. I realized eventually that what I was doing was I was sending myself symbols from other worlds through dreams because the dreams were connecting the different worlds, like the non-physical. That was the point of discussion that I started out with in the cash flow shows. And the tailgate's asking Ion to clarify what the point of the symbols was.
So what understanding did you come to?
Eventually got to the point where it was all just complicating the matter anyway. So at that point when I was asking the questions, it was actually making more sense for me of the whole parallel worlding in terms of orienting myself. Like I remember one day I was walking along and I just got hit with a huge feeling of like deja vu or something. So I felt like I wasn't sure if I was dreaming or if I was awake, and I didn't know how I got where I was because the place I was walking reminded me of so many other places that I've walked. I saw this symbol, and the sun was hitting it. At that moment, it really clicked for me what the symbols were about, and it has something to do with the orientation of them. So if the symbol is turned like 45 degrees or 90 degrees or whatever, it's almost like a dial to show you when the next train is arriving. So if it's a certain symbol, it means the world that that symbol is associated with is about to manifest. If it's at a certain position, so it's like if it's at the 9 o'clock position, it means my ride is about to arrive, basically, to go back to that world that the symbol represents. Does that make sense?
Ryan says I use signs a lot more, you know, like I run across the same signs because I'm in New York, so I could sort of, you know, replicate the same sign over and over again or movie poster and whatnot.
It's like I'm walking around and there's all these portals available everywhere and they kind of manifest like the tide. So like the waves come up and hit the shore, and when they come up and hit the shore, that's when you can grab the wave and ride out. So the symbols to me are just telling me the timing for how close I am to seeing the train show up to take me back to where I saw the symbol. It's like when you're in the subway and you have all the different signs telling you which trains are coming, when, and where they're going. Aaron even told me in the beginning with the symbols, he said, you'll get so good at it, you won't need to even look at them anymore. It'll just become a feeling. Like when someone becomes a good enough surfer, they're not sitting there anticipating or watching the wave anymore. They're not watching for the wave to come. They can feel the opportunity to grab the wave. Angela had a question for you. What's the furthest out place that you've been in your travels?
In the night.
In a physical, actual traveling?
Yes.
Like on a plane or something?
No, like in, when you're traveling, when you're Portland and you let go and reality, the simulation or program of reality is like coming with you, but the anomalies are so great that you know you're traveling.
I run into people that I can talk about, like that day, or I run into people I saw earlier that day, or I went to a bar where I knew that the guitar player was too good to be in a bar that I was in.
So as you think it manifests?
I found a picture I made in the future, but I don't understand how I put the picture there.
When you're asleep, are you awake? When your body's lying down, are you still awake? Matthew, when you sleep, do you sleep with your eyes open? As in, you travel.
I don't know. I've only astral projected like once, and I can't really do it consciously again. And that was just with acupuncture.
You know, the images of like the industrial complex and the bombing and stuff. Would you have other images of that, impressions of that going around during the day? And stuff? Not particularly that one, but parallel world scenario kind of thing.
First talked about this poster that you created in your future, I recall when you were sharing that you actually found this poster on the side of a building in your present reality.
No, that is true. I found it across the street around the corner, and the first time I noticed it was right after the school crossing showed up, and part of the poster was missing, so it seemed like I had not only put it up, but I'd been there and taken a piece down already. And that was, you know, the interesting part. Oh, it wasn't even a complete picture I found. I didn't know if I took the piece down or someone else did, but it was stuck on there pretty good.
And you knew you created it. Your signature was on it, but your signature was a little bit different.
Yeah, my name isn't really on it, but I just sort of labeled some initials and did some, you know, I already knew it was mine anyway because, you know, the ideas were mine. But, yeah, I put some of my initials on it, sort of.
And I am confirmed that.
I'm very curious about all of this stuff.
It reminds me there's a similarity of creating something in your future, placing in your past to show up in your present now.
I started working at a check cashing place like 2 years ago, and Saint Germain's book on alchemy was there. I read it cover to cover because it seemed interesting, but then, you know, like a week ago, it occurred to me that I put it there without realizing it. Or I didn't, but maybe even someone else put it there. But then I realized, you know, anything could be moved in and out of anywhere, right? That's the whole point.